Hello and welcome to Love, Death and PMS, a podcast channel that's not just for women, but for anybody that can relate to love, life and work and all of the emotional baggage that comes with it. My name is Lucy Blackley and I'm the founder and director of Bombix PLM, a product lifecycle management software solution that streamlines the processes within the product design industry. This week I'll be speaking to head of social media for Eskimo Soup, Jenny Harrison. Jenny and I will be talking about her career history, as well as the switch up from theatre through to marketing. We hope you enjoy this episode and it reminds you to do more of what you love and less of what you loathe. Enjoy. Oh, and before I forget, this episode has two parts and this is part one of two. How did you go from just kind of talking about careers and stuff and jobs? What did you do before what you're doing now, which is social media?
So before I did, I was working for a marketing company. I actually worked in events production. Mm-hmm. So I've done every role in a theatre that you can possibly do backstage. Backstage. I've never done front of house, but I've been in wardrobe, like dressing side of it, to actually managing a wardrobe team, assistant managing a wardrobe team. I've done literally like the lowest of the low crew work, just literally pushing like 3 a.m. Absolutely. I worked for free for 2 years. So I went to university and I was really fortunate in my university course. Actually helped find work and create a network with me, and they were really fantastic at that. And I actually I started off work experience at Northern Ballet in Leeds, and a guy, Martin, that just really, he didn't give a shit that I was a woman. And even though a lot of...
Love that though.
Yeah, he didn't ever treat me differently, and he expected me to go up that ladder and push his flight case and pick up this set. And actually, I don't know whether or not it was something that I actually quite enjoyed, but there were other, I'd say, work experience slash kind of not very... people without a lot of experience working with him who were guys, and although he had that kind of like bro relationship with them, me and Martin got on really well in a different way, and he really showed me a lot and he was happy to give me that time. And then from there, I just had such a random chain of events where I went with Northern Ballet to Hull Truck Theatre, and met a guy called Yemi, who, again, fantastic guy who gave me so many opportunities, but we didn't even really speak. And he came up to me and was like, "You're really interesting. Can we swap contacts? Because I've got loads of work in crew." So I was like, great. And at this time, there wasn't a lot of women who were working around as crew, and a lot of them were in wardrobe because it's quite a divided industry. And now actually coming out of it, there were a lot more women in, I guess, crew roles. But the industry, interestingly, with events is primarily female managers. A lot of them... In the production manager would I'd say it's like a 60-40 split, women more, because women go to university and then they'll go into those management roles and events, whereas guys tend to do what I did, which is, although I went to university, I started deep at the bottom. I did, I worked at a very popular festival, which I won't name simply because I had a really bad time there, where I worked for a security stewarding company, and we were, I mean, the festival's absolutely massive, and we were camping a mile out from the festival, and I only got to actually go see one act, who was Amanda Palmer. But while I was there, I was working a night shift, and the guys that I actually worked with on the night shift were great, but I go back to the camping, and it was blaring hot summer. So I was sleeping during the day on a Lila outside getting like sunburned because you couldn't sleep in the tent because it was so hot. But then at the same time, the people who were working around me were bouncers who were, I'd say, creepy, just to say the least. So you'd go and have a shower, and there was one guy who insisted on waiting outside the shower for me. And every single time I got the shower, he'd be like, "Oh, you should have told me you were getting a shower. I would have come and helped." And it was that kind of attitude where I was very much one of the only women doing the security stuff. And it was almost a novelty to them. And luckily, the people that I was camping with made me feel quite safe, and I was with them. But yeah, it wasn't a good experience. But then I learned from that and realised, right, well, I don't want to do that. That's cool. So I actually went away from festivals and ended up doing yeah, going to theatres. And so Yemi, as I was talking earlier, gave me work at Whitfield Theatre Royale, Harrogate Theatre, loads of theatres in West Yorkshire.
Yeah.
As crew, and I did all the load outs, and it was hard work, but eventually I got offered a follow spot job for Wakefield Theatre Royal's pantomime, and I worked with an amazing lady called Louise, who was a wardrobe person, and she just happened to pick up this job, because events work is essentially you can pick up whatever you can get, because it's actually quite few and far between if you haven't got a massive network of contacts. Yeah. So she then, actually after that Christmas, contacted me saying, they're, doing The Lion King at Radford Alhambra Theatre. And we need, someone to step in because someone's off. Could you just come? And I was like, what? I've never done wardrobe before. And she was like, it's really easy. It's dressing. And I was like, great, cool. So I popped along and I was literally pushed onto the backstage area halfway through The Lion King Disney show. And there were just these mad people running around with like these giant grass skirts. And I don't know if I'm allowed to reveal the secrets of the puppetry, but the puppets that were these giant giraffe heads and like running around. And this was my first experience of a theatre show backstage. And I was like, what the fuck is this? I love it.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
This is amazing. Like, this is exactly where I need to be. And like, I didn't actually do a job role that it was the matinee performance. I did that. It was on the evening. I was expected to do the full track on, I remember the wardrobe mistress was a bit of a hard ass, but like one of those amazing women that's just like, I couldn't make a single mistake or else she would have had me out kind of thing. But like, that's the people that you learn from.
Yeah.
And that was my first experience from that. And I remember I used to basically like tear up every time they did the bows, because it felt like I was a part, even though
you were part of it. Just, yeah. You're backstage, you're just behind the scenes.
So proud of it every time. And working for the shows, I worked Warhorse, Jersey Boys. I did like the main running track for Jersey Boys, and then eventually worked for people who would then notice me and actually pick me up and want me to go on and do other things with them. So I had a lot of opportunities through having the right attitude, and eventually warranted being paid. I mean, I did get paid for the majority of my theatre work. It was more the festival stuff that I had to do for free, but. So I spent my career basically running around after theatre shows, and that was my passion, and I absolutely adored it. I moved back to Hull and had a really bad experience, and the worst experience really in a job ever, and then moved on, sort of realised that I didn't want to go back touring again for various reasons, at least for a few years.
Yeah.
So I was looking for something different and found a junior role and started kind of from scratch in marketing, but really quickly rose to the, well, I get, it's a small company, so the top is kind of a bumpy, but rose quite high and is now a really respected member of a marketing team, which is
really cool.
3 years. Yeah.
Yeah. What was your favorite, like just going slightly back into your theater, what was your favorite show? Was it The Lion King?
No, actually my favorite show is Jersey Boys.
Okay. Why?
Simply, do you know what? I can't say why, other than the way that the production comes together is so fantastic, and the cast were, it was the people who worked on it. The crew were just so amazingly friendly, and sometimes when you work theatre, the crew, there's a few ballets and things like that that I've worked on where the team that you work with, especially when they're touring, tend to be quite unfriendly, or at least they don't have time for local people, like local members of the team. You do your job, you go home, and that's kind of it. Whereas with Jersey Boys, they literally just wanted to be your best friend,
family.
And they wanted to share knowledge. And it was the same for Warhorse, actually. I dressed two amazing men who bought me a book at the end of... I bought me a poetry book at the end because of how much, all the conversations that we've been having, because it's customary to give your dresser a tip. And they did give me a tip between them, but they also bought me this book, and I still kept the book, and it means so much to me that I had that bond with, it's only, I think it was 3 weeks, that one. And like the intimacy that you go through when you're dressing people, and it's obvious, but, the trust that you have to have in each other to be able to get the job done. But, and I guess like my, I'm like trying to pick my favorite show, but I'm basing it off my favorite experiences.
Yeah, but that's it, because you're not on the front. You're not at the front, so you've got to do it from the back end, which is usually your relationships that you've created.
Yeah, absolutely. I think to be my favorite experience was being able to go and help the amazing wardrobe team of The Bodyguard where I was brought in actually to take over the dressing role of the leading lady. And I was instead to potentially take over the tour, and for various reasons I decided I couldn't do it because it was like a year's commitment, and
okay.
6 months of that was in London, so I didn't want to commit to having to live in London for 6 months. But the experience, I can't remember how long it was, I want to say 2 months, but I don't think it was, but it was a period of time where I was touring with the show over a couple of venues, and the team were just fantastic, and I still am in touch with Claire, who was the wardrobe manager, and she actually picked me up a year after meeting me on another show. Mm-hmm. And she said that she remembered me, and she messaged me a year later and was like, can you come and work for me finally, something to come up,
yeah,
while we come back together. And I was just like, this is amazing, I can't believe this. And but there was, it's kind of my proudest moment of in theater. It's the little things of, you get very used to working your absolute ass off for no one to give you any credit for.
Yeah.
You don't get the claps, yeah, at the end. And it's only really pantomime where what happens is the at the end of the run, the main actors might invite all the crew on to take a bow.
That's nice, yeah.
Which is nice, but it generally doesn't happen quite,
yeah,
a lot of the time. And so I remember there was this sequin dress as part of the part of one of the salsa number in The Bodyguard. I can't remember what song it is. I should really remember. But if you've seen it, you'll know it. And this dress, because it had just been pulled apart and danced on, all the sequins had basically dropped off it. And none of the other team members really wanted to resequin this dress. And it had been sat there like and sort of dying slightly. So I was like, you know what, screw it, I'm going to do it. So I sat there for, it must have been like 5 hours,
yes,
just sequining this dress. And I did it, and it was kind of my first time. The other thing, I have no skills in wardrobe or sewing, and I had to learn that right there and then. There was no room for mistakes at all. I got sat in front of a sewing machine, and I had to pretend to know how to use a sewing machine because I was so worried that someone might judge me. So I just got it and had to work it out. Same with the sequin dress. So I sat there, sequined it all, really proud of it. Got put on the rack, got put on the actor during the show, and luckily I actually watched the show that night. I think it was my night off. And she came on in that dress, and it looked so good.
Yeah.
And it was like, no one else in the audience, it's just part of the scenery. Like, it's just a part of this all, this whole sequence. But I saw that dress, and I was like, holy crap, like, that was me. That's basically me on stage.
Yeah, yeah, it's your part.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, I don't think there's any job that I've done quite a lot of things in my life, and there's never been a job of in any other industry where you can feel so proud of something so small, I guess, without, so insignificant to everything else. And that's why, I guess, with thankless job, but a wonderful thankless job, I guess.
I think with, because you said The Lion King, in a way, The Lion King was kind of your big break.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, mad. My first wardrobe job was like one of, like a dream job for people to be able to work with Disney, I guess. And although I wasn't working directly for Disney, it was,
it was part of it.
Yeah.
But I think you said that you were thrown in at the deep end.
Mm-hmm.
But would you say that you're going from what you was doing to like going into social media? Would you say you was thrown at the deep end, or would you say you took to it naturally?
I think the fact that, and not in a really mean way, but I found it very easy because of how difficult my work was before.
Yeah.
And I think I also had an arrogance around me where I was like, 9-to-5 job, I can handle this kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I actually, I did struggle, I think it took a lot of learning around the etiquette, especially with customers. In theatre, you don't see the customers.
Yeah.
So you have these relationships and develop bonds with people, and there's no customer-facing side of that for backstage. So I had to learn the etiquette of business, essentially. And like me, as I am normally, I am a typically business person. But luckily, as a creative role, I fit in quite well because you might expect this for someone who does social media. But I definitely learned to hit the ground running years before I took that role. But what was difficult, I think, was adapting, really, to having... from skipping from a job that lasts 2 weeks to a month, maybe 2 months, to actually being thrown into a job where if I didn't quit or get fired, this could last forever. Do you know what I mean? So it's terrifying because I'm like, what if I get bored? What if, like, I do...
These are all the things that you think about.
Uh-huh.
Like, for me, I was the total opposite. I was in a... I'm going to say 9-to-5 job, but sometimes I'd work from 8 in the morning to the next day.
Yeah.
It has its moments.
Yeah.
But I know what you mean. It's that kind of... It's got a sense of security to it. Yeah, it's an office job. And I think for me, like, now I'm going into this thing where, you know, I have to choose when I take my days off. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can choose that based on what I'm doing. And I think for me, like, I've gone kind of the opposite to you, but at the same time, we've both kind of switched industries. So for me to go from fashion to software, originally for fashion, but now it's for products, whether it's cosmetics, could be hair dye, could be clothes, electronics, plant pots, whatever, books, whatever, if it's just whatever the product is. Yeah. And I think for me, that was it was natural in the way that I knew what I was doing because I knew my industry. So to create the software around the industry was very easy. But to, I think I knew nothing about software. I expected that you could do anything, which you can, but it comes at a price. And it's like, oh, where do we put that money now? What's the most important thing? You know, who's going to benefit from that and stuff? So I think, yeah, I think that's the hardest part is the adjusting and thinking, actually, shit, I've got to adjust, and you've got to do it in a positive way because it's going to benefit you. You can't go in there and be like, you know, like you said, oh, it's a piece of piss, basically, you know, you to go from what you was doing, which was all nighters or whatever, to 9 to 5. It's kind of, I think if you go in with the right attitude, I think anything's possible. But I do think, everyone thinks social media is easy though. Because they're on social media all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm doing little bits of mine myself. Sometimes I get, you know, other people to do it and stuff. It depends on what it is. But like if I'm just out and about, I'll take a video. You're just on my phone and stuff.
Yeah.
It's about capture. It sounds silly, but it's capturing the hashtags. You know, who's going to come in and see that? You know, with people saying like social media's easy, what wouldn't they know about it that maybe would change their mind now, do you think? If you was to say, tell them what social media is and... You know, they're saying that they can do it themselves, but what would they benefit from by doing that with someone?
I think, to be fair, a lot of people could do it themselves, and a lot of people do. And what annoys me the most is when businesses are selling a product that people can do, and they're not transparent about the fact that they can do that. And we have clients where they can happily do their accounts themselves, and they might outsource because they just don't have the time, or they just prefer to leave it in the hands of professionals. But then there are some clients who absolutely don't understand social media and need that help. But I don't really encounter people in client work who specifically understand social media like properly. A lot of the clients that I work with actually generally are people who don't use social media.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why they've come to us. But in my training, however, I often train people who already use social media for business. And they're just coming to see me to pick up tips because they see me as a social media expert. And generally my role actually revolves, I mean, obviously I post social media and I have a really wonderful apprentice who does a lot of stuff with me now, so I don't have to do everything, which is really helpful actually. But now I'm kind of more of a content creator and more of a creative role within that because that is what I'm best at really. So actually when people come, what I find interesting, most interesting, is when people come and they think that you just need to sell a lot, and they're happy to just promote or talk about the business all the time, but not in a human way, but just in a "we sell mattresses" or "we sell this" kind of way. Buy this. And I'm putting it into really simple terms, but a lot of people don't realize that they actually do it, and they never tell their story. And I think that the thing that shocks people the most when they come in, actually, I repeat the same things in pretty much all my sessions, no matter what the session is actually on. And that's the other thing, is I split my sessions not just into how to do social media. I'll split my sessions into platform-based or specific strategies and things like that, because realistically, people need a full course. Like, we do 4-part courses with people where you can actually learn from us over a period of time, because it actually does take that much to actually really understand how to use social media and have that support. And it is the storytelling element. I think some people just get it straight away, and they actually like the speaking to camera, telling your story, using video. People just pick that up and do it because they must have read something. Like, I didn't think it was an immediate obvious thing, or they must just follow businesses and people who do that already, and they've been inspired and they've done it. But people, because it seems to take so long to create a video or to create visual content, or they feel they don't have the skills to create visual content. There's so many tools out there to actually just be able to create. It's engaging. If it's visual and it's human, then it's going to be engaging in some element. So I guess that's what people, I don't think people really get, and that's the reason why they need to come and hear someone tell them they should really be using video content.
Yeah.
I think we all know it deep in our hearts, and I struggle to do it. Like, I've only just really been able to start doing it simply because my time of being able to actually sit, when I actually realized, oh, wow, I could just spend half an hour creating a video, 15 minutes edit, and it's done, or else I would have spent ages writing a blog. Or,
yeah, it's too long, and people don't read it anymore.
No, people don't care.
Yeah, like, I write articles for the industry, for the technology sector, for specifically PLM. And in the beginning, my numbers were really high. Mm. And, like, people were viewing them and, you know, it was fantastic. And the last couple, the numbers are still good, but it's nothing near what they were. And I was like, and I kept saying, what am I doing wrong? And I kept, you know, I'd go to my editor and I'd be like, what am I doing wrong with this? And she was like, you're not doing anything wrong. It's great. And I was like, then why are people not reading it? And she was like, I don't know. And so now I'm going to record everything in audio version so that they can listen to me. People are just too busy.
Too busy. Yeah, absolutely. Well, you lent me a book and I've read one chapter of it, even though I really want to read it, but I've got other things that come above reading a book. So I've listened to audiobooks, I listen to podcasts, and at first I would only listen to podcasts that were available on, like, Stitcher or iTunes one. Yeah.
Apple one.
Yeah. And but now I actually, I'm happy to go on someone's website and just listen to it through there. And I just find it so much easier to consume that content, and actually also hearing it from someone's voice is so much more powerful.
Oh, it's warm, isn't it? Yeah. Like, I was doing videos yesterday and I was like, you know, and you see yourself all day. I mean, I spoke to you last night about my issues with it. You see yourself all day and you start to hate yourself and then you're sick of your own voice. And I was like, you know, shit. But I think I think people do listen to them more because they can put it in their ears and start working with it. But I think now with, like, the stuff like, have you heard of Anchor? It's like so basically you upload your audio podcast to that and it spreads it out to Apple, to Spotify, to all of them. It does it all.
There's a few of those distributors, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I only know Anchor.
Yeah.
But I think that's the way forward. Yeah. And I think for me, it's just, people are more engaged, and also, like you said about storytelling, people want to know it from, like, a certain voice so that they can hear the compassion, the empathy, because I think feelings sell more than anything nowadays.
Absolutely.
It used to be about adverts, you know, sell, buy, this, like, is an offer.
You would shout, your television would shout, hope that your shampoo advert would reach enough people so that, like, 10% of that audience that watched it that day, I think that's quite a high number, but pretend it's 10%, needed shampoo that day, went to the shop, remembered the advert subconsciously in whatever way, and happened to relate to it in a brand awareness way, or they suddenly trust your brand because they recognise that brand. And it's like, it's sending out a message in the hope that in the future an amount of people will have heard that message. Social media is about trying to connect with people immediately, trying to catch the attention of, I think it's the 10%, 90% of feeds are now on, especially on Facebook, and there's the Instagram, that kind of section of social media. 90% of people's feeds are going to be friends and family, or people that they engage with on a very regular basis. And even down to whether or not they like photos or they comment on photos, that if they frequently watch Instagram stories, comment on photographs of an influencer or a business, Instagram will go, right, their algorithm will be like, right, this person wants to see this content. Mm-hmm. And it's only 10% of feeds are actually dedicated to the content that people don't engage with as much. So it kind of dips in, and that's often businesses. I think those stats are right. They were right last time I looked it up for training. So it's that fighting for that space, and people are spending less time scrolling. They aren't interested. They want to see valuable content, and they're much more likely to unsubscribe or unfollow something if it feels spammy to them. And then trying to work out what spam means to one person and what it means to another. I'm brutal with unfollowing businesses, and
me too. Absolutely.
Don't care about selling or anything like that. So
if it's forcing you to kind of, or you feel forced, it's not going to work for me. Like, you know, a lot of, like, my clients that come on board, like, when they get to know me, I always offer a 30-day free trial. Hardly any of them take it because they just believe in it as soon as you start talking about it. Like, in the beginning, I would try and sell my business, and I would offer the 30-day free trial as an initial thing. It doesn't work. You're selling an emotion. And now, like, one of my clients, she phoned me up maybe a couple of months ago, and her colleague was on maternity leave. So she just phoned me up, and she's screaming down the phone. I was like, what is up? And she was like, I love Bombix. She was like, it's given me half an extra person and sometimes a full person to help me get my job done because I wouldn't have been able to do it without this system. And it's like, that's storytelling, you know?
Yeah.
And it's so important. And like, you know, when I talk about that now and I'm in meetings with people and I'm explaining these situations, they love that. They're like, wow, the fact that that person feels that they can go home at night and they're not going to burn out and stuff. And obviously, you know, it's not always easy and people do work hard.
Yeah.
But I think that's the thing with story selling and social media. But I think, yeah, it's a feelings game, I think. And I think more people now are understanding that.
Mm-hmm.
I think even, should we say, I mean, the book that I lent you, The Mary Porter's Work Like a Woman, you know, it was about alpha culture. I think even, you know, I think alpha culture is going down slowly.
I think it is. Yeah.
But it's slowly. But I think you know, even with guys, I think they are buying on a feeling now. People are becoming more brand loyal. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not...
It's buying the experience kind of thing, or being a part of something. It's kind of, to be fair, it's probably the whole buying a brand because it kind of, like buying some Doc Martens.
Yeah.
If you're not buying Doc Martens, then you're not a punk kind of thing of buying into that culture or buying into that. And I think brands that have really worked have done it for years. And then now small businesses can do that with social media. And it's bringing people into your community, bringing them under your wing. And creating advocates for your brand, and it's if you're there trying to manipulate, I think it's not trying to manipulate people. You're trying to become on the same level as them. I guess is a good way to describe it.
Yeah, they feel part of the story.
And they
believe it's theirs as well.
They have a voice.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I think that's like it's really good. And for me, it's that over anything now. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, people are always asking me who's my competitors. I'm like, I don't have any. Mm-hmm. And obviously I do, because we've got people selling a similar product. But if you stop caring, you go further.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, because everyone's got something a little bit different to offer. Mm-hmm. Maybe my product isn't right for that person. Similar to the podcast, maybe it's not right for that person.
No, absolutely.
It doesn't matter. Concentrate on the people that are interested. And I think people will go far. We hope you enjoyed this episode and that you'll be tuning in next week, where I get to speak to Marketing Director James Wilkinson of CTI Digital. If you are enjoying our content, please do give us a follow, a like, and a share across all our social media platforms. We're currently on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you are part of the product design industry, please do check out Bombix PLM. Thank you. Bye-bye.